Mark Agelay is an industry leader in psychotherapy and men's mental health. He's helped countless guys get back on their feet, deepen their relationships, and excel in their lives. Now he's taken all that he has learned and is sharing it with you. In each episode, Mark will interview an expert in the field of masculinity and men's work. We'll cover topics such as emotional intelligence, masculine identity, anger management, financial health, trauma recovery, marriage and divorce, ethics, and spirituality. Tune in and become a better man.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Mark Agelay, and I'm here with Max Rosenkrantz. He's a coach, he's a men's work expert, and he's the founder of a wonderful organization in my backyard in Colorado called Rocky Mountain Rights. Max, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
So today we're going to talk about a topic that comes up so often with the guys that I work with, which is limiting beliefs. And I know that you have developed a system and you're really like a wizard at helping people overcome their self-sabotage, their procrastination, you know, their kind of imposter syndrome. And it's something that is just unbelievably common nowadays. I mean, do you see that in the work that you do too?
Yeah, I see it a ton. I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah, people just are so pinned down by these beliefs that they have. So I'm excited as we get into the meat of the show to learn about exactly how you do that with the guys that you work with and giving some tips to listeners. I'm sure as you're listening, you're probably like, oh, wow, I have some of these things. I procrastinate. I have imposter syndrome. I don't feel like I belong anywhere. It's really common, and Max is here to help.
Yeah, I'm excited for it.
Yeah, so let's dive in first with your story, right? So like, how did you get into this work? What was your experience with masculinity and coming of age and kind of where are you at today?
Yeah, great questions. So my story is, I think, non-traditional in the same way that a lot of people's stories are non-traditional. Mm-hmm. I was a mechanical engineer for a long time. I did consumer product development. And I thought that was the career I wanted. I thought that that was the path I was going to take. And I burned out. I was struggling with a lot of anxiety, a lot of imposter syndrome, a lot of procrastination. And I burned out really bad and was struggling with my own mental health challenges and had an awakening in the back of an Uber on the way to the airport one day and realized that a lot of my troubles were inside my head and not out there in the world. And so that sent me on a path for the last about 5.5 years of discovery and training and working on myself and working on integrating and embodying masculinity, among other things. And now my focus has become really going deep on the subconscious programming that was keeping me stuck, that keeps a lot of guys stuck.
Yeah. So let's dig into a little bit more detail. Can you tell me about some of the limited beliefs that you have?
Like, what are some? Yeah, I mean, I have a whole list, Mark, that the list is like 87 long that I worked on, and there's 75 more to work on. It's a continuous process. But for me, the big ones at the start were things like, I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable. That was a big one. I had to do a lot of work around my relationship with my mom. I'm not important. I have nothing valuable to offer. A lot of fear about making mistakes, fear about being perceived as incompetent. So these were the kinds of things that were running in the background that I wasn't really aware were running in the background until I was aware of them. And then it was very painful to be aware of them. So I worked on them. But those are really common ones that I personally had to work through in order to get to where I am today.
Yeah. And I imagine, right, like when you were in it, you weren't aware that those were the roots. So I'm curious how those showed up in your life. And I'm asking this question also for our listeners that they might have some of these, we'll call them symptoms or something, right, of limiting beliefs. What are some things you were able to see were happening?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones was more on under the general heading of perfectionism. Mm-hmm. That I, as a mechanical engineer designing systems, I really liked to get things perfect. And to some extent, that's an asset in a technical role. And so it gets hidden. And so for me, it was hidden. It was like, oh, this is what makes me a great engineer. Why would I change this? But what that led to is I would spend a long time perfecting an email that didn't really matter. It was just like, write a sentence, send it, get a response. But I would reread it and reread it to make sure there are no typos, no grammar errors. And it sounds like a small thing, but if you're sending 20 emails a day and every time you're spending 10 minutes in anxiety thinking about, oh, okay, is this right? It slows you down a ton. So that was a really common one for me. And then avoiding hard conversations, even simple things like, you know, hey, I didn't finish that thing that I said I was going to finish today. I'm going to get it done tomorrow, or I need more time. I avoided those conversations and then just tried to pull an all-nighter to finish things, or would get into work the next day and say, oh, I didn't finish it, I'm going to finish it today, instead of just giving people proactive communication to say, hey, I'm struggling with this, I need some support, or I'm struggling with this, it's taking longer than I thought. So those were some of the things that just led to me really feeling burned out and overwhelmed. Yeah,
I'm hearing like, yeah, there's like a conflict avoidance, right? Or like a fear of disappointing others that's underneath that, and wanting to not be critiqued, right? Because I imagine like if you're perfect, then there's no room for critique. There's no exactly. one can say anything about your email, right? If your email is just like nails it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in this thing, right? You're in this like storm, right, of limiting beliefs. And then you're talked about this awakening in the back of an Uber. I'm curious, like, what is that story? How did you wake up? What did you realize in that moment?
Yeah. So I'll give you a little bit of context. I was down in Beaverton, Oregon, visiting a client. I was working on a consulting on the engineering team. Visiting a client, really hard day. I'd woken up at like 4 o'clock in the morning to go to the airport. I'm exhausted. I'm in this Uber on the way back to the airport, and it's stop and go traffic, like 15 miles an hour, really slow. And the driver is speeding up and slamming on the brakes, speeding up and slamming on the brakes. He was really taking stop and go literally. And I'm sitting in the back of the car just stewing, like, oh my gosh, you have one job. I paid you to drive me there. Why are you struggling so much with this? And there's all this negative critical talk happening in my head that was just the norm for me at that point. So I didn't know any different. And I sat up to kind of say something, to like make a comment, to ask him to drive smoother. Like, hey man, I had a long day. But before I opened my mouth, I saw this shiny blue object near the steering wheel, and I didn't know what it was. And so in that moment of confusion, fortunately, I got curious. And so I just asked him, I was like, hey, what's that blue thing on the steering wheel? And he said, oh, I have polio. My legs don't work. I'm driving the car using my hand. This is a device you can buy for $300 on Amazon, and it's, you know, DOT approved. And now I can, you know, make a full-time living driving Uber. This was in 2018 or 19, when I think you could probably make more as an Uber driver. But yeah, so here's this guy who's disabled in a way, and he can drive for Uber because of this device. And that really put things in perspective for me. That something kind of cracked open for me that, oh, this guy's not a bad driver. I was making him a villain in the story that, like, oh, he's such a bad driver. No, he's like actually awesome. He's driving the car with his hands. That's why it's a little bit less than smooth. And then we had a great conversation. And basically, I recognized in that moment that what's happening in my head and what's happening in reality are two very different things. And when I argue with what's happening outside, I lose.
Yeah, that must be like, one, I guess I love that story, because it sounds like compassion won in that mm-hmm. moment, right? Like when yeah. you're like, oh, wow, this guy is working with his limitations, and he's doing something that I imagine most people with polio never get to do. I imagine that they don't get to drive vehicles, right? So compassion like punched through all the judgment, mm-hmm. right? That, again, so many people carry around. And I'm also interested in this like good versus evil narrative, perfectionist narrative, because and please correct me wrong, because I make some stereotypes, but I would assume that as an engineer, like perfection and black and white and like right and wrong is such a huge part of the job. So it sounds like in this story you opened your mind to like the gray, you know, in mm-hmm. a way that maybe you hadn't before. Is that fair to say, or would you change that?
Yeah, I would say that's fair to say. Yeah, and I'd say that falls under a bigger narrative of that internal battle. Something I've been working on recently is that internal battle is often a way to drain myself. And so I see this with other people as well, that like, if I can fight myself enough, that can do one of two things. One, it can protect me from fighting somebody else. And two, it can justify my existence. It can make me feel like I'm working hard enough to deserve to be here, even if I'm not doing anything externally. And that's a surefire recipe for burnout.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to dig into that a lot more, that inner battle, because the way I talk about with my guys is the difference between cold anger and hot anger. Mm. You know, and hot anger is what we typically think of when we think of, you know, men, right? This idea of, you know, blowing up, being a bully, punching people, breaking walls, like whatever that is, right? And then cold anger is what you're talking about. Also what I was in, like I wasn't an outwardly angry dude. I was actually very conflict avoidant, very friendly, very like nice guy, right? But I had a lot of cold anger, which is that resentment, that judgment, that black and white thinking. For me, sometimes tapping into grandiosity, like, oh, I'm better than everybody else, or so smarter, or like everyone's an idiot, and I'm just like trying to navigate the world, and like, why don't I have what I deserve because everyone else sucks and I'm so great, right? Like I would be like in this stew of just resentment and judgment. And yeah, I see you, you know, laughing and smiling. So I imagine you have some similarities there. What uh-huh. would your cold anger like?
I mean, yeah, resentment, bitterness and resentment. And it's, you know, it's a work in progress. I've made so much progress on this. And so I'm grateful for that. But I'm not perfect in any way today. But yeah, resentment of feeling like I wasn't able to communicate the things that I really was good at, my gifts. I wasn't able to share those gifts with the world. And so in my head, it was, oh, like I have so much to offer and it's better than everybody else. And yet nobody recognizes it and nobody sees me. And so those are some of the mental thought patterns that I was really stuck in and that led me to working really, really, really hard and then giving up. And yeah. In both cases, trying to prove that I was better than other people somehow.
Yeah, doing that like pendulum swing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I have my version of it, which I've always identified with like a cycle of recovery. I'm sober, right? But like this idea of like going hard, going big, and then burning out, crashing down, resurrecting from the ashes like a phoenix, feeling like the hero, going big and burning out, right? And just being in this cycle. And so much of my work has been like lengthening that cycle to some extent so I can at least be functional for more of it and making it less extreme. So the burnouts and the you know, big hero moments are not as big, moving towards more like stability and consistency. But I'll tell you, and I hear you talking about this, like it's boring. Like it's way more boring than being like the hero of the story, right? Or being the smartest man on earth, being Ozymandias or whatever, right? Like you don't have that kind of level of grandiosity if you're just living like a stable, normal life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and so I think the goal of integration is getting to that more balanced state and being okay with that. Like we have a secure enough ego that it's okay if I'm just balanced and sort of middle of the road, that doesn't conflict with this need to be better than or this need to be the victim. So it's a process of integrating that.
Yeah. There was a great, it's actually our last guest, Sky Donald, was talking about this progression. I'm curious if you agree with it. He talked about you go from villain to victim, and then victim to hero, and then hero to guide. And I really related with that as he was talking about that as far as like the progression of my sense of self. And I'm curious if that rings any bells for you.
Yeah, that resonates a lot for me. Yeah, I like that. Victim or villain to victim to hero to guide. Yeah. And I would even offer guide in the place of guide, sort of just human. Mm-hmm. Like you may become at peace with the fact that you're just one human and that's enough.
Yeah. You may finally become humble, right? Which is like such a spiritual pursuit, you know? And I think, and I was in this boat, I'm curious if you were, right? Like so many men fear humiliation, right? Which is like the dark shadow cousin of being humble, right? This idea of like being embarrassed or being exposed or like that feeling unlovable. I think we really keep ourselves guarded and have these masks up to not be humiliated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's super common because shame is such a powerful emotion and it's such a strong protector that will often do just about anything to avoid being humiliated, to avoid being embarrassed. And it's a sneaky emotion because we don't want to feel it. So we'll avoid it through basically any number of complex layers of personality structure or behavior or however, you know, pick your poison on this one. But yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah. So I want to do a little bit of a pivot because your other thing, I think what you got connected on was Rocky Mountain Rites, where you help young men do initiation rituals out of Boulder, Colorado. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious within your story, what did you have childhood roots to some of this, or did you feel like you lacked initiation in a way when you grew up?
Yeah, I would have loved to do the event that I run today as a teenager. Yeah. I did something when I was about 14, 15 that brought in the wilderness experience, the outdoor experience, the sort of facing the unknown component, but it didn't have the emotional intelligence piece that we bring into Rocky Mountain Rides. It didn't have the community building sort of connective components. It was just, let's go in the wilderness, build a shelter, sleep alone in the middle of nowhere on your own for a night, learn how to tie knots, learn how to make a fire. And that is really cool and fun. And so teenagers love that stuff. And so we incorporate that. And the next level, and especially in a place like Boulder, the next level is saying, okay, how do we authentically express our emotions? How do we share as men and as soon to be men what it's like to go through this journey that, like, yeah, you're not always going to be the hero. You're not always going to be able to achieve what you want to achieve, and bring that humility and humbleness into things. So we bring a lot of connection and community focus around emotional intelligence.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. And like you said, like, that's the missing piece. You know, I really agree with that. Like, I think I love the organization, what you do, because I think having young men watch older men be open and talk and be vulnerable is like unbelievably critical now. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't have that experience, right? I mean, the only time I saw my dad express emotions when his father died, I saw him. But yeah, aside from that, like, zero. And my dad's a great dude. I mean, he's a role model to me in so many other ways. But as far as like emotional bandwidth, it's just not really there, you know? So right. I think, yeah, getting those emotional role models is really important.
Yeah. Yeah. And telling a young man to do something usually doesn't work, but showing him it coming from yourself authentically, maybe in the moment he's not going to respond, but at least then he has a model of like, okay, that's available. And you get 20 or 30 guys each modeling what their unique expression of masculinity looks like. Then all these teenagers, they have the opportunity to say, oh, okay, it doesn't just look like what Instagram says it looks like. It doesn't just look like what the movies say it looks like. I kind of like what that guy's doing. He seems authentic to me. He seems cool to me in a way that would work for me. And then they get to take that and try that on.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful, right? And it just widens the definition of masculinity. So we're going to move to our first commercial break. When we get back, we'll start to talk more about that. I also want to talk more about limiting beliefs, namely imposter syndrome, perfectionism, and self-sabotage, and hear some tips for how people can start to identify and overcome their limiting beliefs. So if you're listening, there's a lot on the docket. Hang on in there, and we'll see you on the other side.
Follow Voice America at facebook.com/Voice America for juicy updates from your favorite radio shows and podcasts.
Men's Therapy Online is now accepting new members. Men's Therapy Online offers a solution to the lack of outlets for emotional expression, positive role models, and access to meaningful milestone experiences. In our post-COVID world, loneliness is at an all-time high. Men need consistent community. Our society is rapidly changing. Old models of masculinity are falling at the task of promoting emotional intelligence and meaningful connection. Men's Therapy Online offers tools and experiences designed to help the man who is struggling to balance traditional male roles and emotional fluidity. Whether you need to get back on your feet or take your life to the next level, Men's Therapy Online has your back. We help our members become a true 21st century man. A man who is not burdened by the rapid change of society, but who contributes to it honorably. If you're interested in signing up and finding your band of brothers, go to menstherapy.online to learn more. That's menstherapy.online. Start your journey today.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Men's Therapy Podcast with Mark Azoulay. To reach the show today, please call 866-472-5791. That's 866-472-5791. Or send an email to podcast@menstherapy.online or visit www.menstherapypodcast.com. Now, back to the Men's Therapy Podcast.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Mark Azoulay, and here with Max Rosenkranz, and we're talking about self-sabotage and limiting beliefs and what keeps guys stuck. So we were talking a little bit over the break that an entry point for a lot of the guys you work with is procrastination. And something that I suffered from, sometimes still creeps up for sure. Did my own, a lot of my own work around. But I'm curious, like, what you think about it, because it seems unbelievably common. You know, there's like when people are doing stuff on time and doing stuff consistently, like they're a hero. You know, I think most of us are just like scrambling and winging our lives in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. And the norm has become that we're overloaded in a lot of ways, and that procrastination is normal. And oh, I'll get to that later, has become normal. Yeah. And so procrastination, it's often a starting point, because if you can conquer that piece of the puzzle, it frees up energy and bandwidth to work on the other things. And procrastination has a lot of layers in my experience. And the main ones are, I'd say the first main layer of procrastination is the fear that you're going to be exposed as flawed if someone sees that your work is flawed. And so you avoid the work. I like to say that procrastination happens when the expected benefit is smaller than the expected drawbacks. It's really simple. If in your subconscious it's more likely that something bad is going to happen than something is good is good, than something good is going to happen if you do a task, you're not going to do the task. It's a pretty smart system. So if you've got beliefs like I'm not good enough, or I'm not smart enough, or I'm incompetent, or I'm not capable, or there's something wrong with me. That's a big one. There's something wrong with me. Just like this fundamental feeling that there, you have some flaw. The risk of that flaw being exposed is going to create a strong anxiety response anytime you try to push through a new task, try to do something that might be outside your comfort zone, or something that exposes you to the potential of being criticized. So I'd say that's layer number one. And then layer number two is feeling like something bad is going to happen if you make a mistake. So usually I'd work with this as the belief mistakes and failure are bad, or if I make a mistake, I'll be rejected. And that comes from when we're kids, the way most of our parents operate is that we criticize mistakes and we praise when people do things right. And so as an adult, we still have that programming running in us that if we make a mistake, we're going to be criticized and we're going to lose approval from this important figure that in our childhood is our parents, who we depend on for everything. So those are the two first layers, and I'll pause there.
Yeah, well, it just, I like the way you put it, because yeah, the brain doesn't know like what's right or what's good. It just goes for what's easy and what feels, you know, pleasurable, right? So even though like you should do that homework assignment or you should get that project done, if it's going to feel bad, the brain's going to avoid it. So I really like that first layer of it, just like the brain moving away from difficulty. Mm-hmm. And then the second one of, yeah, avoiding disappointment or avoiding critique, I think is really common for a lot of people too. And, you know, the horrible tragedy perfectionism, right? It's like the more you procrastinate, the less chance you have of succeeding, right? Because it's going to become like a lower quality output anyway. So mm-hmm. It can become this like vicious loop, I think, for a lot of people, where they don't perform up to what they want to, because then we did it in the last 4 hours before it was due, right? Or they pulled that all-nighter and their brain wasn't in a great place when they're mm-hmm. doing it. So I've seen it like kind of drive people into the ground, where they're in this constant like state of anxiety and fear around the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, in that comment that you made, there's a couple pieces that I see. One is if you save it till the last minute and you give yourself less time, then you can say that's why it isn't good. That's why I made a mistake. Not because I can't do it, but because I just didn't give myself enough time. And the second piece is a lot of people don't realize that they're hooked on the stress chemicals that come from waiting until the last minute. They think that's excitement. They think that's, ooh, this is how I like, you know, get things done and pull through at the last minute and be the hero. And they don't realize actually that's wrecking your health, because that's just a bunch of stress that you don't need to be experiencing.
Yeah, I mean, the metaphor is, my guys, back to that hero conversation, right? It's like, yeah, procrastination. It's like, you know, you let your guard get overrun, and then you got to go in the back with the machete and the flamethrower, and like, you get to like save your backyard, right, from the vines and the weeds and all this stuff, right? And then the other one is just like, you just go out and you weed a little bit every day, right? Which is not nearly as exciting. And you don't get to be this like Indiana Jones character. Like, you're just like a dad, you know, like you're just like a normal guy that maintains his yard every weekend. And yeah, it is telling, I think, and sometimes actually sad for me, that I think as men, we find challenge in that way. We have to create challenge that way rather than seeking it out in perhaps more healthy and progressive forms.
I'm curious
what you think of that, is like using it as a way to impart challenge into our lives.
Yeah. Well, I think when we create, many of us, me certainly, and a lot of guys that I work with, have the luxury that we get to choose what challenges we take on. For the most part, life has risk and uncertainty, but our society as a whole is at a pretty high level of comfort. So we get to choose what challenges we take on. And we want challenges to be the hero, partially. And I think for a more mature reason, to grow, to like become a bigger version of ourselves. So when you take on a challenge, which is a big part of why I do Rocky Mountain Rights, like, it's not fun most of the time that I'm preparing for it. The weekend itself is fun, but the 6 months leading up, it's a lot of challenge. But it gives me an opportunity to be challenged in a way where I'm choosing to do that. And then, okay, it helps me just focus on, let me get the other things done to get them done, not to make those my big project where I'm being the hero. So anytime that you can do that for yourself, I think that supports you in showing up more consistently in other areas of your life. Take on that motorcycle project or that classic car restoration, so that can be the place where you're the hero. And then weed your yard every Saturday and get your work done on time. And that's just your day to day.
Yeah. Yeah. I help my clients do that a lot. And I'm curious how you do it with your guys. I say the same thing. It's like, we have to put challenge in our life because life is so cushy. And I think especially living in privilege and living in Boulder, Colorado, right? Like living in a pretty wealthy, like unbelievably safe part of the world, right? It's like, we need that, or else I think we do go soft, right? Or we, our self-esteem goes in the shitter, right? And like, we don't know who we are. And I think a lot of guys get lost when they seek comfort all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. I think we need to feel like we're still dangerous sometimes, you know, or we need to feel like we still got it. You know, it's kind of like the midlife crisis is maybe like the acting out of that idea of being like, do I still have it? Am I still a man? Am I still tough? Am I still cool? And I try to help my guys like find ways that they can reinforce that about themselves without needing to, you know, go buy a car that's too expensive and leave their wife and, you know, start a cocaine habit, right? Like, we're trying to avoid that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the things I love doing is just going out into the wilderness with no technology and doing the simple things. Like, you go out and collect your own firewood, start a fire in the snow, do it all off grid. You can spend a bunch of hours doing basically nothing, but feeling like a badass, that like, man, I started a fire, like I'm cool, and no harm was done and no 401ks were drained.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's why I love backpacking, right? Cause it's so simple. It's just like walking, eating, sleeping, pooping, right? Like, that's it. But yeah, everything is so hard because you have no support in doing those things. But I think it does like unlock that almost primitive or primal sense of adventure that I think a lot of guys need. I mean, I would go as far as I think all guys need that sense of adventure in their life to some extent to feel fulfilled.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm curious, kind of go back to our topic of limiting beliefs, about self-sabotage, and maybe imposter syndrome is kind of like a cousin of that. But there's so many ideas and thoughts about self-sabotage, like whether it's, you know, a fear of success, or it's like an inner self-hatred, or it's like, you know, people reaching like a threshold and going back to what they know. So I'm curious how you would define self-sabotage, what you think that is like. But I guess maybe to guide you a little bit, is like, I'm thinking about things like perhaps addiction tendencies, or people that tend to get into toxic relationships, or you know, the guy that, to make it, you know, I guess ratchet down a little bit, someone who's like just hitting their stride at the gym and then all of a sudden finds themselves at home overeating, not going back, you know, or the person who like doesn't put in for the new job promotion even though they know they could get it, you know, like those kinds of behaviors. I'm curious what you think about those.
Yeah. Oh man, Mark, I could say so much about this. I'll start with upper limiting. One of my favorite books is The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. He talks about upper limiting, that essentially when something good happens, we will often do something to counteract it to bring us back to homeostasis. And the way I think about that is we feel safe in a domain that we have mastery over and that we're comfortable with, which means having more success than you have right now is going to be unsafe at a deep subconscious level because you don't have mastery over that. Making more money, you don't know what that's like. You haven't got it mastered. And so your system will try to bring you back down. Oh, I'm not going to go for that promotion, or I do get the promotion and then, well, I'm going to start arguing with my partner because that will kind of bring things back to what I'm comfortable with, what I'm used to. So that is the framework that I love to think about self-sabotage in. And then why is that? Why is it that we're uncomfortable with those higher levels of success? Often it comes back to these core beliefs, like I'm not good enough, or I'm not worthy, or I'm not deserving of that. And then it gets fun when once we clear out some of the core stuff, that's where the really interesting internal conflict come up. So for me, the fear of success, one piece of that was the belief that if I'm successful, I'll be imprisoned by total responsibility for everyone. And this was because I saw my dad as essentially the only breadwinner in his family, and he had to take care of his sister, take care of his mom, and kind of run everything for the whole family unit. And my brain said, oh, okay, so it's because he's successful that he's so responsible for everyone else in the family. And therefore, I was avoiding success. I was like, well, I don't want to make any more money because then that's so much burden that I'd have to carry. So it starts for me in the work that I do. It always starts with what are the core self-limiting concepts that we're carrying: worthiness, lovability, capability, deserving. And then once you take care of those, if you want to keep going, if you're like me and you're like, I want to learn this thing to the nth degree, then you focus on what are those subtler internal conflicts of what are the perceived threats of success, the perceived threats of wealth, the perceived threats of a healthy relationship. And then you neutralize those internal conflicts, or I guess a better way to put it would be integrate those internal conflicts, because they're two sides of the same coin. And when we can integrate those two, then you have a balanced view and you come back to being, like we said at the end of the journey, the guide of like, okay, cool, maybe I will have some more responsibility if I'm more successful, but I'll also have more capability to deal with that responsibility. So it's a net benefit.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, right? Like, kind of the heart of the matter, how do you help your clients overcome these limiting beliefs? Or like you said, clear out the core stuff or integrate that? Like, what does that process look like on a very kind of practical level?
Yeah. Good question. So the starting point is identifying what you want to change. It's what's the behavior? Is it procrastination, perfectionism, something like that, imposter syndrome, or is it an emotional pattern, anger, anxiety, stress, fear? We always diagnose and clearly capture what's the actual problem that we're trying to solve before we go about solving it. And then once we've identified what that is, and we'll use an example. So if the person is struggling with procrastination, we don't just label it procrastination. We say, what's the specific project that you're working on that you're putting off? And now let's visualize that you push through that blocker, do that task, submit it, send it out for review, and then notice what are the thoughts and emotions that come up when you imagine doing that. And what that will do is give us access to the subconscious content that's blocking them from doing the thing in the first place. Once we have access to that, we'll find what the belief is. Maybe it's the belief mistakes and failure are bad. Maybe it's the belief that I'm not worthy. Once we have the belief, we're going to go look in our early childhood to find where was this belief installed? What are the early experiences that the person had that led them to form this conclusion about themselves? And sometimes it's not early childhood, but usually that's where we start. That's where you get the biggest bang for your buck, because so much of our programming is between age 2 and 6.
Yeah.
So we go to those early experiences. We figure out where was the belief formed. And once we found out where the belief was formed, what we do is we essentially poke holes in the three major assumptions. The first assumption is that the belief was true. as a child, it made sense. So we have to poke holes in the fact that the belief was true. And we do that by coming up with other ways to interpret what happened. Mm-hmm. The second assumption is that we saw the belief. We think that we looked at the world and the belief was out there and we just discovered it. But actually, it was an interpretation in our mind. So when we make that distinction, that's the second thing that we neutralize. And then the third thing is that the feelings that we have, we think that those are proof that the belief was true. But the feelings stem from thoughts. Our thoughts create our feelings create our behaviors. We often think it's the other way around. We think our feelings prove that the thoughts are true. So when we can refute those three things, that the belief was true, that we saw it, and that we felt it, the brain goes, okay, huh, something's not quite adding up here. I'm going to revise the model that I had. I'm going to revise the belief that I had. And there's a couple more steps to the process, but that's the basics of how we get in there and rewire that belief. And it's very experiential. Mm-hmm. And once it's rewired, it's gone. So it's really powerful.
Yeah. I'm curious if you could walk our listeners through either like a case study or maybe some from your own life and whatever you kind of have on tap to help illustrate this point. Like what is some of the outcomes people can expect for this kind of work?
Yeah. So I finished with a client recently, real estate entrepreneur, young kids, and mainly the focus was getting more focused. Less distracted, less procrastination. Yeah. But one of the things that we worked on was the belief, I'm not safe. There was a major trauma in the family at an early age, and we worked on that trauma and the resulting belief that I'm not safe and the world isn't safe. And what that did was, one, it made it a lot easier to take risks and to make mistakes in the business and make progress. So there's more focus and productivity. And the other, this was an added bonus, was it, he started sleeping through the night a lot easier. He wasn't waking up at 3 a.m. saying, oh my gosh, I forgot that thing on the to-do list and I'm not going to get that done. But instead it was like, okay, things are okay. There's no survival threat here if I forget one task on the list. There's no survival threat here if I didn't send that email. And so that tends to lead to an upward spiral of more safety, more relaxation, leads to more creativity, leads to better ideas, leads to better execution on projects, and then repeat the cycle. And things start to get better quite quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. I found similar in my work, right? It's like once you untie that one linchpin in the knot, the whole thing starts to unravel pretty fast.
Yeah.
Because I think it also, to your point, I think it also teaches the brain that it can be flexible and that, yes, it can be neuroplastic, and that these things that we took for granted and we assumed were true could not be. And then the brain starts to go through this whole like rewriting process of like, oh shit, like if that thing wasn't true, what else in my life is not true?
Exactly. Yeah. That's sort of the meta belief that change is difficult and takes a long time. Sometimes I work on that directly with people, because if you make that explicit, then that process that you were just talking about accelerates, that it's like, oh yeah, okay, wait a minute. None of this was ever true. So I can just rewrite it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a really great story. We're going to move to our next commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk to you, the listener, about ways that you can start taking action now to identify and start working through some of your limiting beliefs with Max as your guide. So if you're interested in that, hang on in there and we'll see you on the other side.
Voice America is on LinkedIn. Connect with us today.
Men's Therapy Online is now accepting new members. Men's Therapy Online offers a solution to the lack of outlets for emotional expression, positive role models, and access to meaningful milestone experiences. In our post-COVID world, loneliness is at an all-time high. Men need consistent community. Our society is rapidly changing. Old models of masculinity are falling at the task of promoting emotional intelligence and meaningful connection. Men's Therapy Online offers tools and experiences designed to help the man who is struggling to balance traditional male roles and emotional fluidity. Whether you need to get back on your feet or take your life to the next level, Men's Therapy Online has your back. We help our members become a true 21st century man, a man who is not burdened by the rapid change of society, but who contributes to it honorably. If you're interested in signing up and finding your band of brothers, go to menstherapy.online to learn more. That's menstherapy.online. Start your journey today.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Men's Therapy Podcast with Mark Azoulay. To reach the show today, please call 866-472-5791. That's 866-472-5791. Or send an email to podcast@menstherapy.online or visit www.menstherapypodcast.com. Now, back to the Men's Therapy Podcast.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Mark. And in this segment, we talk directly to you, the listener. So if you've been listening to this and you're like, oh my God, I have some of these things. I do procrastinate. I do self-sabotage. I am perfectionist. What am I going to do about it? Well, Max is here to answer those questions. So Max, where should somebody start if they're interested in starting to understand and breaking through their limiting beliefs?
Yeah, a good starting place. So in terms of my work, you can go to my website, which will be in the show notes, coachmaximum.com. There's a freebie that I give out where someone can do the full process for the belief I'm not good enough. So that's an easy way. But in terms of what you can just do on your own, would be start to look at what patterns of behavior that you have and what are the emotional patterns that repeat themselves, and ask yourself, where is that coming from? What am I believing that's generating this pattern? So if you're struggling with procrastination, just listen. What are the thoughts in your mind? Become mindful of what is that voice in your head saying is going to happen if you complete this task. And that will usually tell you what to work on, what beliefs to work on. If, you know, the voice might tell you, oh, people aren't going to like me, or, oh, I'm going to make a mistake, or things are going to go poorly. And that will start to point you to those beliefs. And the homebrew version is you then want to look at what early experiences led you to forming those beliefs. And that can start to help. The step-by-step processes really will supercharge things. Working with someone like Mark, working with someone like me, will allow you to go through the targeted sequence that's going to unlock that neuroplasticity. But mindfulness is the first place of noticing, what am I thinking and believing that's causing me to do these things? And you can challenge that in real time. That can be helpful. What really will make the difference is going deep into what are the roots of the beliefs.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, that's the formula, right? I would just add, I think especially for the guys out there that maybe are more engineers, more mechanically minded, or more traditionally masculine, like, trust the weird thoughts, you know? So yeah. I'm trained as a psychoanalyst, and like, it's all about free association, which is basically the process that you outlined, right? And it's like, yeah, the thought is not going to make sense, right? You might be like, oh, why do I not want to, I don't know, submit for that promotion? And the thought is like, oh, because no one will love me. You know, I think as like a mechanically minded person, we're going to be like, no, that's stupid. Like, doesn't make any sense. And just dismiss it before we have a chance to like investigate the signal, you know? So I would just say to the guys out there, like, if it's weird and if it's emotional and if it doesn't make sense, that's actually the thing to pay attention to, because your brain is spitting that up for a reason. There is a root there. There's a great kind of adage in AA that I use with my clients, which is, you know, if it's hysterical, it's historical. So if you find yourself just having like a crazy reaction to something, you're like, why do I care this much about, you know, the way Cindy looked at me, you know, during my workday? It's probably because it's triggering some historical belief or some historical trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like that.
Yeah. So I guess you talked about some of the beliefs that guys tend to gravitate towards and tend to get them stuck. I'm wondering, and this is, you know, a lot of the guys come in and talk about their partners or talk about their children, and they say, hey, now that I've learned some of this stuff, how do I impress it onto the people that I love? So I'm wondering for you, you know, maybe father is a good place to start. How would you have a father teach their kid about this, or start to do some of this work to hopefully circumvent the process or have them not get stuck in the same trap that they might have been in?
Yeah, that's a great question. The main thing that you can do as a dad is get curious about what are the conclusions that your kids are forming as a result of the interactions they're having. So especially if you notice them looking sad or angry or frustrated or scared, you can ask them, you know, what are you thinking right now? What does this mean to you? And kids are usually more open and emotionally available than adults are. So they will usually just tell you, oh, it's because you don't love me. And instead of arguing with them, the thing to do is to validate, oh, wow, it seems like I don't love you. I'm so sorry. That makes sense that you're feeling that way. Once you validate them, then encourage them to think of other ways of potentially interpreting what's happening. So is it possible that daddy does love you? He's just really busy with work. Is it possible that he just has a different way of sharing love than what you want, and he needs to understand better what it is that would really help you feel loved? And it's not about contradicting the original conclusion. It's not about telling the kid that what they concluded was wrong. It's about giving them other ways of interpreting, other possibilities. Because once your brain sees that, or your mind sees that there's other ways to interpret what's happening, the black and white of the original conclusion turns to gray. And that's what we really want, is that gray of like, okay, I can be flexible in my thinking. So notice when your kids are having some sort of emotion, get curious about what's going on for them, validate what's happening and their thoughts and feelings around that, and then offer them other ways to think about it without directly contradicting the conclusion that they drew.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And I think that's a great way, like you said, to start to like train and teach the kid what's going on, right? How to like be more flexible. And really, I mean, our topic just keeps coming back to this like black and white thinking and hero and villain mindset and like good and bad, right and wrong. And I just see that as one of the most toxic things, I think, in masculine culture. I mean, so much of our battles and conflicts are on who's right, you know, who's superior or who's better. And like, once you open it up to the gray, a lot of that stuff just fades away.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, the gray is such a sign of maturity, because maturity requires us to be able to hold a bunch of different perspectives simultaneously. And maturity comes with it a lot of uncertainty, a lot of unknown, a lot of humbleness of, oh, I really don't have the answers. I don't have control over this. And to feel at peace with a lack of control requires trusting yourself and requires trusting the universe or whatever higher power you believe in. And that's all a part of developing maturity and integrating yourself and integrating your world so that you can be more flexible.
Yeah. Yeah. So to talk more about the future, I'm curious, Max, like what's next for you, whether as a man or in your business or a new venture, like what's on the horizon? What would you like to do out there in the world?
Yeah. I mean, what I'm most excited about right now is the processes, the modalities and techniques that I use with my clients are very structured, very step-by-step. And so I've started training in artificial intelligence on those steps and have a prototype of that built on that can lead people through these processes on their own. And that is really exciting because one, it'll scale and a lot of people need this and there's only one of me and there's only one Mark. And there are other people out there that do this kind of work, but not as many as I think we could use on the planet. So I'm excited about that AI, that technology. And it takes away the self-consciousness. If I'm just talking to a computer, I'm going to be really honest about like, oh, here are my shortcomings and my flaws, because you're a computer, you're not going to judge me. Whereas I think a lot of people, when they start the journey, they're afraid that their therapist or their coach is going to judge them. And so anything we can do to make it easier for a person to open up and just be like, okay, there's no threat here. So that's exciting. And it kind of gets me back into engineering, which I haven't done in the past 4 years. And so kind of, you know, flexing that muscle.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm a big fan of AI and therapy. You know, like I think it can be threatening to a lot of therapists, and I'm happy that you don't feel that way, right? Like I think a lot of coaches and therapists are like, oh, they can't take our job. Like our job is so human, like blah, 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 right? And I just see that as insecurity, whereas I love your framework of, hey, how do we integrate it? And how do we use it as a tool and kind of get ahead of that? Because I do think it's going to like, it's going to cut out the middle, right? It's going to cut out like kind of everyone that's below 50%, because the AI should be about 50% of a therapist, you know, should be about half as good as most of us. So I think it does create also some really good evolutionary pressure for the industry.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true.
And how about with Rocky Mountain Rights? Where do you envision that project going?
Yeah, this is our third year running a Young Men's Rite of Passage, our fourth year running programming. The weekend is June 19th through the 23rd for men this year. So if there's any man listening that's curious, that website will also be in the show notes, rockymountainrights.com. I'm open to seeing what happens. Every year during the weekend, I get a lot more clarity on what wants to happen next. The lead up, the months, like right now I'm in the middle of planning and producing, and it's just logistics and enrollment and all of the, you know, nitty gritty of running a nonprofit. And then during that weekend, during that container, everybody just gets ripped to shreds and rebuilt. And so I'm trusting that when that happens, it'll be clear to me that, okay, this is what's next. But the main goal is for it to spread. And so we have a bunch of guys that drive in from Kansas every year, and they're planning to run an event in their hometown coming up next year. So that's what I have on the horizon, is getting to mentor those guys and teach them how to run this event that I've been running for the past 3 years and spread the work. Because it's a lot to start from scratch. And if we can replicate the model that we have and share it, then people can get a leg up.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk to you more about that, right? Because I wonder, right, if you had whatever president of America, right, and you could like institute mandatory initiation for boys, what would that look like, or what would that do?
What would that look like? I mean, I would probably start with just the wilderness component. Mm-hmm. And then for the young men, for the teenagers that love that, they come back. And maybe in that wilderness component, we do a little bit of the emotional intelligence piece, because I think young people are more quick to open up to it, because their role models are different than the ones that we had 30 years ago. Start there, just get more people outdoors, and then the next level, and frame it as a challenge. Like, are you up for it? Are you up for this new adventure? And it's going to be harder, and it's going to be cooler, and we're going to go deeper into the woods. And I mean, something that comes to me right now that'd be really cool is if it was the same weekend in all parts of the country, and then the rest of society would notice a difference. If every young man in the country went into the woods, into the mountains on the same weekend, that would make a profound statement that people would notice. They'd be like, oh, things are different. And when they come back, they tend to be fired up and they tend to be open and softened, that like, okay, I'm not going to be the bratty teenager anymore. I'm going to be an empowered young person who's starting to become a man. I'm going to take out the trash. I'm going to clean my room, not because mom says so, but because like, I want to be a strong person. And that difference from before and after can be really stark for some of the young men. And it would be so cool if every household in America experienced that on the same day.
I think that's really cool. And I think of like, yeah, more indigenous or traditional cultures where like they basically had that, right? I mean, there would be like a village initiation where all the boys of a certain age would just go out and do it. And then they'd all come back and it would be a different village in some ways, right, when they returned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everybody would treat them differently.
Yeah.
And that's a critical component, is that if you go and have a profound experience at any age, whether it's teenage or adult, if you have a profound experience and you come back and your community treats you as if you're the same, there's a cognitive dissonance. You're like, I'm different, I'm new, I'm better. But why is nobody reflecting that to me? So it's really important that the community reflects like, yeah, you've grown, you're stepping into a new chapter of life.
100%. Yeah. So yeah, that integration piece is critical. We do have to wrap up here, but it's been a great conversation. I'd love to have you back on, I think, to dig into more of this, like, you know, ritualization of life, right? Or how does community and integration really work in the modern era? I think that'd be a great topic. But for now, we have to say goodbye. So Max, where can people find you online if they want to work with you or get to know more of your stuff?
Yeah, the main place is coachmaximum.com. You can also find me on Instagram at coachmaximum. Those are the two primary ones. Instagram, building that page up, just giving bite-sized nuggets to people. So follow that page and you'll get more details on the things that we talked about today.
Fantastic. Well, thank you all for tuning in. Max, thanks for coming on the show. And if you like what he has to say, please like and share this podcast and to somebody who needs to hear this. If there's someone that's stuck in some of these limiting beliefs, you know, someone that's procrastinating or self-sabotaging or is a perfectionist and just needs a shakeup and to know that there can be something different, Coach Max is the way to go. So all that stuff will be in the show notes. Like, share, subscribe, do all the stuff. Max, again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark. It's been great.
And thanks, listeners. We will see you next week on another episode of the Men's Therapy Podcast.
Thank you for joining your host, Mark Agile, on the Men's Therapy Podcast. Be sure to tune in again live next Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel and anywhere podcasts are found. To support the show, leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. For more information or to apply to be a guest, visit www.menstherapypodcast.com.